You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
Good afternoon. It is almost like we planned this sermon for this day. We did not. We named our church Providence for a reason, because we just needed God to work out the details. But it is fitting. And what a delight it is to welcome all these babies into our family, to bless them and pray for them. My wife, Debbie, and I often say that parenting is like a roller coaster. There are high highs and there are low lows. There's surprise turns and loops that just flip your whole world upside down. There's people throwing up on you. And you feel sometimes like you're just out of control, because you, no matter how bad you want to, you can't get off the ride. Like, there's nowhere to go. And so you start looking around the people around you, and some of them are like laughing and have a great time, and some of them are screaming and crying out and praying for God to help them. You get off the ride and you're like, what just happened? I mean, it's very disorienting. But then for some reason, we get back in line and we do it again. And some of you have like an express pass or something on this ride. Parenting's hard. It exposes, at least in me, my deepest fears and insecurities. But it also can be really fun, and it brings tremendous joy to my life. This passage we're looking at today is explicitly directed to kids and parents and deals with that relationship. But there's more going on here than just that. The principles that are talked about here translate to all of our own relationship with God. Just like we saw last week with marriage, you know, marriage is not just marriage. It's a powerful metaphor. Parenting is the same way. The parent-child relationship is a rich and powerful metaphor for our relationship with God. And so all of our task today is to kind of root ourselves in that relationship and then make the applications depending on where we are in our lives. Sinclair Ferguson said, this is the fundamental way that a Christian ought to think about himself or herself. That I am a child of God, and that his people are my brothers and sisters. And this text roots us firmly in that reality. The section we're looking at is almost just like a passage in Colossians 3, where Paul addresses husbands and wives, and then parents and kids, and then slaves and masters. And there's a section like it in 1 Peter and in Titus. And you have to ask, why does this little formula keep coming up? And the main reason is because the biblical writers are engaging something called the household codes. And so in Greco-Roman culture, they believed that the way to have order in society was to maintain order in the home. And so philosophers and teachers and religious leaders of all kinds would set forth a set of rules and principles that were to govern the home. They were called the household codes. Now, their attention to the home is really commendable. That's a pretty good philosophy, actually. The problem is that their views on that, how they thought those relationships should work, didn't always line up with the gospel. And so the biblical writers are taking something that's already in the culture, these codes, and they're applying a biblical worldview. They're applying the truth of the gospel to it. It's a really cool and kind of subversive way that they engage the culture. The main application, or the main change that they make, is that they place love over order. And so the Roman codes were all about order. The fathers are tasked to maintain order, and they're given just every right to do whatever they want to maintain that order. There's not a lot of talk about the necessity of love, but Paul puts love on top. Remember, all of these codes are flowing from the command at the beginning of chapter 5, which you heard read. There's even some parenting imagery there where he says, be imitators of God as beloved children. And the way that we do that, he says, is to walk in love as Christ loved us. So all of this is flowing from that command to walk in love. In other words, Paul is bringing the ethic of the gospel, which we have been looking at the last few weeks, into your home, into your closest relationships. And that is super challenging. Because if we're honest with ourselves, we are often the worst version of ourselves with the people that we're closest to. If you have kids, you have conflict over homework, because you do. And when that comes up in our house, I can't tell you how many times we've looked at our kids and been like, wait, you would never say this to your teacher. Why are you saying it to me? And of course, as adults, we're like this too. We are really patient and kind with people we don't know very well. But then we're like short-tempered and really irritable with people that are closest to us. As parents, we often have a lot to give to our work and to our hobbies and little to give at home. Like just this week, I was working on this sermon at home, and my middle son, Holden, my youngest son, sorry. I only have two. There's no one in the middle. My wife was like, what? My youngest son, Holden, he kept coming up to me because that's what kids do, and he wanted to do something. He was just bored, and he wanted to do something. And I'm trying to work on this thing, and I kept being like, hey, I gotta work on this, I gotta work on this. And then the irony of it all hit me. That in the moment, the sermon on parenting was more important to me than, you know, the actual parenting. And we're just our worst selves at home sometimes. The truth is, though, that who you are at home, that's who you really are. And so this passage is written to the real you. Not the you that shows up with a smile on your face, but the you that totally loses your cool behind closed doors. And here's what it's saying. It's saying there's hope for the real you. You can walk in love at home. And the reason you can do that is because God has made you his children and brought you into his home, into his family. This is a really simple text, and so we're going to treat it real simply. I've got some words for kids. We've got some words for parents, and then I've got a few words for all of us. All right? Let's start with the kiddos. Listen, kids, I know you know how to do that thing where it looks like you're paying attention to your parents, but you're not. And very rarely is a sermon right to you, but for the next like 6 or 7 minutes, this is all you. So I need you to look up here. I'm talking to you guys, all right? The bears are on it. All right. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. It just makes sense. This is like how God ordered the world. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, that you may live long in the land. He's just saying that if you listen to your mom and dad more times than not, that's going to work out good for you, on average. Here's one of the coolest things about this passage. The household codes of Paul's day addressed the fathers, the husbands, the masters, who's all the same person, because that's the guy who ruled the house. Children did not have any rights. They didn't have any power. They're basically the same status as slaves in the house. But Paul addresses them personally. He treats them as free moral agents. He sees them as fully part of the Christian community, and he calls upon them to honor their father and mother, not just because it's like part of the Roman order, but because it's part of their own relationship with God. Obey your parents in the Lord. All right. Kids, this is what the Bible's saying to you. It's saying that you're made in the image of God. It means he sees you, he loves you, and he wants really incredible things for you, and that's why he gave you parents. And I know your parents aren't perfect. They get angry, they forget things all the time, they hardly ever understand really what's going on. But God gave them to you for your good, and that's why he wants you to obey them. Now, what does it mean to obey your parents in the Lord? Kids, have you ever started to do the thing that your parents asked you to do, and then as soon as they stopped looking, did the other thing that you really wanted to do? Have you ever done the thing that they've asked you to do, but just complain about it the whole time because it's so stupid? You ever done that? Have you ever done the thing that your parents asked you to do, and then just go tell your friends how mean and terrible your parents are for making you do that thing? See, the thing with all of that stuff is it's not very loving, is it? And what it means to obey your parents in the Lord is to obey them with an attitude of love and respect. That's what pleases God in this. Here's a little tip, kids. If you're having a hard time with your parents and obeying them, you can just in that moment say to them, Mom, Dad, I know I should obey, but I don't want to. Or I'm having a hard time doing it. Can you help me? Your parents are going to eat that up, man. Like, if you say that, no matter how like mean and terrible they were in that moment, hearts are going to melt, and they're going to be like really nice all of a sudden. You know why? Because they care so much more about your heart than anything else. And if you let them into that, they're going to be there for you. All right, so this week when you're struggling with your parents, just try it. Say, hey, mom, dad, I'm struggling. I want to obey or I don't want to obey. It's hard. Can you help me? All right, if they don't help you, you tell them to call Pastor Will. We'll take care of that. All right, I'm on your side. Now, there's some older kids in here who would not ever say something like that. You're too cool for that. And so I want you to consider this. There's just not anywhere in the Bible, and I've read the whole thing, there's nowhere in the Bible where God is asking you to be cool. He definitely wants you to be loving and wise. That's what this whole passage is about that we've been studying. That's what your parents want for you. You see, a lot of the conflict that kids and parents, especially older kids and parents, have is because they're aiming and they're thinking about two different things, two different objectives. Parents are thinking about, besides like, how can I just stay sane? They're thinking about, how can I help my kids be loving and wise? Kids are sometimes thinking about that, but often they're thinking about what's cool. And your parents aren't cool, are they? No, they're not. And the harder they try to be cool, the more embarrassing it gets. That's what my kids tell me. But listen, your parents know something that's really important, and that is this, that love and wisdom is way better than being cool. You see, your parents used to be just like you. They wanted to be cool, and a few of them were. But we've learned over the years, none of us are cool now, but we all learned that cool doesn't last. Like, the things that make you cool in middle school, in high school are just annoying. And the things that are like kind of cool in high school, if you're doing that in college, it's really immature. And the things that people think are cool in college, if you're doing them when you're my age, you're just a total loser. See, cool doesn't last. You know what lasts? Love and wisdom last. Love and wisdom is always good, no matter what age you are. And that's why your parents want that for you. Now, if you want that, if just somewhere deep in your soul, you're like, yeah, okay, maybe love and wisdom's okay, I'll give it a shot. Here's what it's going to take. You're going to have to be willing to consider that your parents know some stuff that you don't. I know that sounds crazy. Just a couple weeks ago, I was out at the playground with my youngest son playing basketball. Now listen, I don't know a lot about a lot. I do know some things about basketball though. And I taught my oldest son, since he was just a little kid, to play basketball, particularly how to shoot. I know about shooting. And he's a great shooter now, just a great shooter. So I'm with my youngest son, and we're out on the playground, and we're shooting around, and he's just, you know, he's off. He's not making much, and he's getting super frustrated. And I was like, hey, bud, you're kind of pulling your hand back when you shoot. I just, try this for me. Just leave your hand up in the air after you shoot, like just gangsta style. Just leave it up there. And he's like, that's not going to do anything. I was like, yeah, no, just trust me. Just leave it up there. It helps with alignment and follow through. That doesn't matter to you, but there's a reason for it. And so he does it, and he leaves it up there, and he misses. But it's online. It's just a little short. And I'm like, yeah, you see, there's a little improvement there. Keep doing that. He's like, no, it didn't do anything. I missed. I was like, no, dude, trust me. Leave it up there. Let's do it. And he's just adamant. He kept saying, that's not going to work. Finally, I just stopped. I was like, hey, listen, dude, are you saying that I don't know what I'm talking about here? Are you saying that I don't know something about shooting a basketball? Is that what's going on? And it was a total call on him because he knows that I know. He just, no. Listen, that's just basketball. I don't care if he plays basketball. He doesn't have to play basketball. That's no big deal, right? But kids, when your parents say things about screens and technology, when they say things about work ethic, when they say things about helping around the house and having a good attitude, and when they say things about dating someday, if you want to be loving and wise, you're just going to have to consider that possibly they know some things by God's grace that you don't know yet. If you're unwilling to go there, it's going to really be hard to be wise. All right, kids, you can go back to whatever you were doing. You're done. Let's deal with the parents now. Verse 4. Fathers, parents, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. I love that Paul whittles this whole thing down to one verse. Isn't that crazy? There are a million things that you could say about parenting. But Paul keeps it really simple, and I really appreciate that, because I think he's taking us right to the heart of the parent-child relationship. And so let's look at it. Let's start with the second part. This is kind of the positive aim of parenting. The second part of the verse says, bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The word bring them up is to raise them. It's actually the same root word as we saw last week, that word nourish. It means to nurture someone along to maturity. And the way that you nourish a child is through discipline and instruction. Discipline here is actually a very holistic word. It has to do with the whole education and training of a child, like the development of the kid's character and intellect and body and spirit. It's a big word. And training is really just deals with the more verbal aspects of that, teaching, warning, exhorting, admonishing, that sort of thing. All parents everywhere are tasked with raising up their kids like this, right? That's not new to the household codes. What's new is the little phrase that Paul puts on the end of this. Bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. This is really good news. It's liberating news. What he's saying is, you don't have to bring your kids up just like the world brings them up. That's not your cue. And you don't have to bring them up just like how you were brought up. You're not trapped in that. You can bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Meaning, you can help your kids grow up in Christ, to understand who they are in Him, and to orient their lives to Him. That is so liberating for parents that are just struggling. What a great vision. It means, though, that the first job of the parent is to walk with God yourself. It's super hard to lead somebody where you're not going. So you got to walk with God. Beyond that, the command given here leaves a lot of room for all kinds of applications and all different kinds of parenting styles. The Bible doesn't get real prescriptive or formulaic about it. There's a lot of ways to do it. As I've been just reflecting on this passage this week, the thing that keeps coming to me is that at its most basic level, bringing them up means being with them. It was weird. The more that I worked on this sermon this week, the more I was reading that passage, I kept just wanting to go hang out with my kids. And after a while, I was just like, I think that's what the passage is telling me to do, is just to be with them. That's what they really want. I'm not saying that we should make kids the center of our universe. I think that's bad for them. I'm just saying that I think we need to be very intentional about giving them ourselves. In very concrete ways, giving them our attention and touch and life-giving words. I'm telling you, they are desperate and hungry for that. It'll require sacrifice on our part, though. That'd be so hard to do. But that's our calling. To love them as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us. Parents are givers. Like when you signed up for parenting, you signed up to give, 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 get. Nope. Give, give, give. We're givers. And the best gift we have to give our kids is the gift of ourselves. That's what they want. I have a friend named Jim. He's a pastor in Fort Worth. His dad played professional baseball. And so he grew up really traveling the country with his dad. And he's like, you know, that is not the environment that the parenting books would tell you to put your kids in. A bunch of grown men spitting and cussing and swearing and telling stories and, you know, the whole thing. He's like, so that's not probably not like the best environment, but you know what? I didn't care because I was with my dad. And every time I'm with Jim, I'm just taken by how highly he thinks of his dad, how much he loves his dad. He wrote a great little book called Like Father, Like Son that talks about our relationship with God as a father-son relationship. And the richness of that book comes from his own relationship with his dad. Did his dad do everything right? Not even close. You know what he did right, though? He gave him himself. He was with him. The thing that Paul says not to do here is to provoke your kids to anger. And I think the heart of what it means to provoke your kids to anger is to forsake this very thing. To not give them yourself. Because it's incongruent with God's calling on parents. And somehow a kid just knows that and it makes him angry. Let's look at that together. First part of the verse 4. Fathers, parents, do not provoke your children to anger. Now, does that mean that whenever my kid is angry, I've done something wrong? No. Because kids get angry all the time for all kinds of reasons. They don't even know why they're angry sometimes. Usually they're angry, though, because they just didn't get what they want. And in that case, that's good parenting most of the time, right? But there is another kind of anger, a righteous anger that you know about, right? So when there's an injustice in the world, when there's a violation of something good, it stirs up, it provokes a righteous anger inside of you, doesn't it? And what Paul's talking about here is closer to that. He's saying there's a way of parenting that provokes a righteous anger in kids because it's incongruent, because it violates God's design for parents and kids. The kid's anger might come out in all kinds of unrighteous ways, but the core issue is that they're just reacting, they're responding to some pattern of parenting that has hurt them. It's provoked anger in them. Let me give you just a few examples of that. Here's some categories of parenting that provokes anger in our kids. The first one is parenting that frustrates and irritates kids. If you have inconsistent standards or you're really arbitrary in your discipline, that'll frustrate the heck out of your kids because they don't know what to expect. Now, we all do that, but if you have a pattern of that over time, it'll drive them into deep frustration. If you're overprotective and controlling about everything, you never let them try and fail, you always question their judgment, you don't trust them, that will be really frustrating for them. Here's the indicator that that's what's going on. The indicator is that you have kids that want to get away from you. Think how sad that is. I've already said that their deepest desire is to be with you, to have your presence. But if you parent them in a way that frustrates and irritates them, over time they're going to want to actually just move away from you. What do you do if that's the case? See, the answer to all of this is to look to Jesus and say, what has he done for me? How do I walk in that love? And scripture says that God showed his love for you in this, that while you were helpless, while you were astray, while you were getting away from him, he sent his son for you to die for you. So you move toward your kids in their frustration and in their irritation, and you just try to be there with them. It'll feel really counterintuitive, but that's how you do it. Second way is parenting that discourages kids. If you put constant pressure on your kids to achieve, they may get to a place where they just feel like, oh my gosh, this is never going to be enough. And that'll turn into, I'm never going to be enough. And if your kid is saying that, it'll just destroy their spirit. Some of you grew up in houses like that, and you're like recovering from that. The other side of that coin is actually neglect. You know, the kid doesn't feel like you see him at all. They would love some pressure. They feel second place to your hobbies and to your work and to your interests. And it brings about a certain kind of despair. One of the indicators or signs that that's happening is that your kid has this thing of they just want to give up. There's a lack of healthy ambition in their lives. Kids are made to like want to do stuff. And if that's fading in them, it means maybe they're just giving up a little bit. Here's what you do. Do things with them. See, we think, oh, I'm going to give them things to do. Do things with them. Invite them into your life and into your work and into your hobbies. Get into their stuff that they like. You know what's so great about the Great Commission? Jesus said, I'm going to take you people and I want you to disciple the nations and fill the earth with the glory of God. What an impossible thing to achieve. But then he says, don't worry about it. I will be with you to the end of the age. And so it's like, oh, okay, good. You're coming with us. Let's do it. Do stuff with your kids. That'll fan the flame of ambition, good godly ambition in them. The last thing is parenting that embitters kids. Favoritism and comparison, for example. Just read Genesis and you will see how favoritism and comparison just wreaks havoc in families. It's all over the story of Genesis. Performance-based affection, you know, Like you pay attention to, you smile at, you praise and affirm your kids when they do good things, but when they don't do good things, you know, it's like you don't see them. That will embitter a kid. Here's what will happen. A kid is made to want to find acceptance in you, and we help transition that to acceptance in God. But the acceptance they need from you is an acceptance as they are. And so if there's comparison and favoritism and performance-based affection, they won't feel accepted as they are. And what will end up happening is they'll go try to find acceptance somewhere else. So if you see your kid circling, making the rounds, trying to find acceptance everywhere, maybe it's rooted in some of this. The way that you do that is you speak right to their identity. Because the gospel is first about who you are, not what you do. In fact, the gospel says there's nothing you can do. Jesus does it all for you. He lives in your place a righteous life. He dies the death that you deserve because of your sin so that you can have life with God, so that you can be children of God. And so you just focus on affirming the good things, the true things about who your kids are, what you see in them, how God's made them. Let that bubble up into a life that really follows and knows who they are in Christ. This is a hard list to read, I think. It was a really hard list to make. I had a lot more things, and I just got overwhelmed by it. I was like, oh, I can't do this anymore. Because I see myself in some of these things. Don't you? Don't you see some of these things going on? Either in your relationship growing up with your parents or in the way that you've parented your kids. But listen, parenting is not all or nothing. Just because you've failed in some of these things, just because some of this stuff is going on in your relationship with your kids, it doesn't mean like game over. It means you got to keep going. And the way you keep going is you just confess those things to God. You confess them to your kids. And then you start giving them yourself. When you give yourself to your kids, even in small ways, it has tremendous healing power in their lives. Just a couple weeks ago, a friend of mine shared with me, they have a child who's had a lot of trauma in his life. And so there's a lot of anger in him, and it comes out in all kinds of ways, especially at home, just crazy ways. But it's starting to come out in other circles, like church. And that has been really hard for her to watch, like this anger coming out of this kid. And she knows it's because he's got this background of just, he's been provoked. You know, but nobody else knows that, probably. Anyway, it's been really hard. But then she emailed me, and she said this. She said, this is actually, when I think about it, a good step in the process of healing for my son. She said, first, he tries to be super good so you'll love him. Once he knows you won't hurt him, he tries to be super naughty to see if you'll still love him. Then he will melt down and rest in the grace of the fact that there's nothing he can do to keep us from loving him. And then, finally, he'll be his true self. She said, his behavior at church is showing us that he actually is starting to feel loved here, that he actually feels a part of this church family, and it just brings her tremendous joy. What wisdom from this mom to help a kid see where the anger is coming from, to understand it herself, to give herself to her son in his anger, to help him walk in love with God and with others. So good. Parenting is really hard. I don't know where you are on the ride. I don't know if you're like, you know, you're going up that hill and it's real slow and you're like, this isn't so bad. What's everybody talking about? The rest of us are like, wah! You know, okay. Some of us are just holding on for dear life. Wherever you are, here's what I want you to know. You're totally safe on the ride. It doesn't feel like it because you can't get off. You're not in control. Of course you're not in control. But you're still safe. God runs the ride. He's in control. There's a lot of parent panic in our culture. And I think it's because we have this notion that if we just do everything right, our kids will be fine. We're trying to control the outcomes of who they'll be, and you just can't do that. And it produces a ton of anxiety in us. And the kid market is making a ton of money off of this anxiety. Because they're like, oh, this is what you need. You just need this. we'll buy it. Because we'll try anything. It'll work. We're terrified that we're going to mess up our kids. I've got some bad news for you. We're totally going to mess up our kids. Already have. Check. I told my son one time, listen, later I will pitch in for counseling if you need it. I'll help you out. But there's good news. Good news is that we have a Father who sees us, who knows what we need, who knows what our kids need, and stands ready and eager to help if we will just ask. You might have a ton of things going on in your mind today, but just start here. Seek our Father in heaven. Rest in him. Root yourself in his love. I just want to end by meditating on a few verses from Psalm 103. I'm just going to read these. Maybe you want to close your eyes, and I just want you to tune into the Father's love in these verses. Try to sit with him as a child would his dad. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. He forgives all your iniquity. He heals all your diseases. He redeems your life from the pit and crowns you with steadfast love and mercy. He satisfies you with good so that your youth is renewed like the eagles. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love. He will not always chide, nor will he keep his anger forever. He doesn't deal with us according to our sins, nor repay us according to our iniquities. For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his steadfast love toward those who fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far does he remove our transgressions from us. As a father shows compassion to his children, so the Lord shows compassion to those who fear him. He knows our frame. He remembers that we are dust. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.